Well, thanks for coming out to this candidate forum. District 3 is, of course, one of 30 in the Oregon Senate, but is potentially a pivotal seat. Control of this seat adds to the leverage of the party whose candidate wins it in the November 6th election. Alan DeBoer, a Republican, holds it now. He was elected to finish the term of Democrat Alan Bates, who died in office in the late summer of 2016. Alan DeBoer chose not to run for another term, which is why he's smiling now. For the party primaries in May, we got the candidates we'll hear here. I'll go alphabetically. Jeff Golden is a broadcaster and former elected official. He is the host of Immense Possibilities, seen on public TV in Medford and elsewhere. He served as Jackson County Commissioner from 1987 through 1990 and worked as Chief of Staff to then Oregon Senate President Bill Bradbury in the early 90s. Please welcome Jeff Golden.
Thank you.
Jessica Gomez is the founder and CEO of Rogue Valley Micro Devices. She's also the co-founder of the Sustainable Valley Technology Group. She serves on several other boards and committees, including the Oregon Tech Board of Trustees, and has worked as a legislative aide to Senator DeBoer. Please welcome Jessica Gomez. For the audience, I'll ask you to enter listening mode now and hold the rest of your applause or anything else until the end. The candidates have indicated a willingness to spend some time visiting with you after the event. One short disclaimer before we get started, it is true that Jeff Golden did work for JPR in the past. In fact, he held the job that I hold now. But we do not present this forum as a benefit to Jeff or to Jessica, for that matter. Darn it. Rather, we present it in the spirit of public service. As you've heard from Linda Schott, it's part of SOU's mission. It's part of JPR's mission. And as JPR grows, we hope to do more of this in future elections. The ground rules are simple, alternating questions to both candidates, two-minute answers each, no rebuttals. There will be 5 minutes allotted to each candidate at the end for a closing statement. The timers are right down here in front, showing 30 seconds, and you're done. We flipped a coin. Jeff Golden won, so he will get to make the final statement, so the first question goes to Jessica Gomez. And most of the questions tonight come from our audience in advance via email. I've done some combining and rewording for brevity and clarity. The first question is essentially a who are you, and thanks to Caroline Cabral, Brad Carrier, and Kath from Ashland, from their input emerges a general question about political intentions. For Jessica Gomez, you were a Democrat and became a Republican. Why should voters support you? For Jeff Golden, you ran for state senate in 1990 and lost and have flirted with runs for office since. Why should the next generation of young voters support you? Jessica Gomez, first.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so much for being here. Who am I? I'm a mom, I'm an entrepreneur, a business owner. I started our company along with my husband about 15 years ago, and when we moved here, we wanted to be here to be near family. You know, one of the things that I love most about our community is that when we came here to start our company, we got such an amazing reception from everybody. The community really came out to support us. And it was a difficult startup, right? We came here and we had nothing. We started with an empty garage and we built a manufacturing company that makes microchips. We are working with companies all over the world to build their designs right here in Medford, Oregon, and in the Rogue Valley, and it's a wonderful place to be. I developed a love for entrepreneurship through that process. You know, I got involved in the community. I got to spend lots of time at our state legislature advocating for more resources for entrepreneurs, and it was a great experience. Served on a lot of boards and commissions. And now this is the next thing that I'm here to do, and I'm here to really give back, right? I want to make sure that when I leave this earth, I left it better than it was when I got here. So thank you so much.
Jeff Golden, 2 minutes on the who are you question and why should people support you?
First of all, big thanks to SOU and JPR for doing this. This is the meat of democracy, so thank you all very much. I think the question was about younger voters and why they may look hard at me for their vote. In 2003, I wrote a book called As If We Were Grown-Ups about politics. And it's got some pretty daring stuff in it. I'm waiting to hear quotes from it sometime in this campaign. But the core of it was that where we have lost our way centrally in this society is losing the care and commitment we have to following generations, which has been a core American value. Our parents really thought about and made choices based on leaving us a better world. And I think that link has been broken in favor of consumption and immediate needs. And I urged in that book that we start thinking not about the seventh generation out like the Native Americans do, but even the second or third, our children and our grandchildren, and that we elect leaders who will ask the core question of the options available to me here, which is best for my children and grandchildren? Might involve some inconvenience or change for me. Which is best for the next generation? So that plays out in any number of issues, especially, in my view, the climate issue. So I would ask for consideration from younger voters because of what has been a core commitment for me to try and get out of the immediate moment's gratification and promises to voters and start thinking about the second and third generation to follow us.
This is a special edition of the Jefferson Exchange, featuring a candidate forum with Oregon Senate District 3 candidates Jessica Gomez and Jeff Golden, recorded Thursday night, October 11th.
So as we flip back and forth, Jeff Golden gets this question first. This is about a party affiliation and identity. Thanks to Alan Journay, Eric Grace, Chris Wood, and Marla Estes, who in general want to know how closely you identify with the values of your current political party, where you differ with the party, and what you'll do if elected to bridge the divide between parties. Jeff Golden first.
Okay. I identify as a Democrat. I'm also the candidate of the Working Families Party because of a traditional concern for working people and economic justice. And in my view, a bit more of that ethic I was just talking about looking out for the next generation. I am not thrilled with the Democratic Party. I think parties, both parties, have become more about maintenance of power than solving challenging problems. It's more about the Jets and the Sharks than getting the job done. And I think that's played out in a number of ways in this election. So the values you will see on a Democratic Party platform, I'm in for most of those. Those are fine. In fact, in reality, I think, in my view, the Democratic Party needs to cut its ties to corporate America and Wall Street and to really make some changes that will really benefit working people. I don't think we'd have the president we have now if they had done that some years ago. And I'm also concerned, I think I also differ from many Democrats about taking lightly the issue of efficient spending in government. I believe, and I think we'll be talking about, the need for more revenue in Oregon. That means taxes. It's the T word. And if we're going to do that, we have to realize that the concern that people have that government wastes money is sincere and understandable, or at least we should be able to understand that people want to know a reasonable expectation that their public officials will do a good job spending their money. And while I really think that the Republican Party has really used a lot of demagoguery about waste, fraud, and abuse as a way to not raise taxes, I fault the Democratic Party for taking it too lightly, and when there's something like the Oracle debacle in Oregon going, just not wanting to talk about it very much. So I think the Democratic Party needs to do a better job of being out there and good fiscal stewards of our public money, certainly if we expect to get any more of it.
Jessica Gomez, party affiliation and identity.
All right, so I'm a Republican. I also represent the Independent Party, so I received the nomination, write-in nomination, so I'm very blessed to have that. You know, I'm a business owner, so I think about these things in a very practical way, right? What are our priorities for our region? What can we do to actually build a more prosperous and fiscally sound Oregon? We've had over the past, I would say, two bienniums where we've been bringing in more revenue than we've ever had before in our state, and still we are not able to come away with a budget that is really taking all of the, I would say, considerations of the need of the state. So if we look at our state budget, it's $75 billion, right? If you include all the federal pass-through dollars. 41% of that is spent on human services, which tells me we have tremendous need. So one of the things that I think we need to look at is how do we prioritize that need? What do we do in order to build that prosperity in our state so we can start moving forward in a big way? I also noticed that we're starting to see, the federal politics at that level are very nasty, and they are dividing our country in a lot of ways. When we look at local politics, I don't want to see that creeping down in our community. It doesn't belong there. We know how to work together in this community, and I really want to be that voice of reason here. We have big priorities here. We have big issues. We've got fire and smoke. We have things like healthcare. We've got education to work on. Let's take a look at prioritizing the things that are going to be the most impactful for our region. And I think that's where we focus our energy and how we bring people together around those issues.
Next topic is money for education, and Jessica Gomez starts this one. So thanks to Jim Crary and Marisa Paula for questions about tuition at public universities, including this one. What we ended up with for a question was, would you consider a boost in state support, and Marisa got specific, $300 million more, to lower the cost of in-state tuition for students, and how else might you support education at any level? Jessica Gomez.
Yeah, I would love to increase funding for public universities and our education system. I think the challenge that we have is that no matter how much money we pour in, it's actually spent on administrative things, right? Our community colleges and our universities are very good at managing their budgets. What ends up happening is you have things like PERS. You have things like healthcare. You have those costs that all businesses in our region are dealing with, and that's what's driving up the cost. So we can invest more and try to bring down tuition, but unless we get that spending under control, unless we do cost control in things like healthcare, unless we get our PERS situation under control, we're gonna continue seeing the need for those budgets to rise and tuition rise with it. I sit on a university board, right? That is the last thing our board wants to do is raise tuition for students. We spend endless hours going through the budget, trying to find ways to make sure that students are not seeing tuition increases like they've had. But what do you do when you have those growing costs? Just like any other business, we have to balance that budget. And we want to make sure that our state is not divesting from our university system. It's really important. So prioritizing education is going to be key.
Jeff Golden, money for education, specifically higher education.
Just elect me and I'll solve it. This is a pivotal question because we can't even pretend to have a democracy anymore, an equal opportunity society, if access to community college and universities and tech schools is restricted, which it is by tuition. In the 90s, Oregon, the state picked up in the 70% range of college tuition. Now it's down in the 20% range. It's been a short time. We've disinvested in education. We have given up on our responsibility to working people and all Oregonians to have an access to a life of success. Money, yes, I don't agree it all disappears in administration. I do agree that we have a PERS issue that I bet anything we get to later. And I absolutely agree with the need to control public employee and everyone else health costs, bring the cost of health care down. We hope we have a chance to talk about that as well. But again, I'm sure there can be savings. I know there is. I know we don't spend our money perfectly. No state ever does or ever will. But to talk about significant investment, reinvestment in young people and in students without talking about revenue enhancement, to me, is treating people like children who think there's a free ride. We investing means investing. And we have to look at revenue reform in order to do this. I'm also interested in some creative programs that I've seen around that are on the line of an AmeriCorps, an Oregon Corps program. We'll probably be talking about the forest sometime tonight, and the need to reduce fuel loads and the need for intensive labor in the woods to do that. I'd like to see young people offered college tuition in return for a year or two out in the woods, reducing fuel, with the help of the federal government, sort of a Conservation Corps program. That's one of probably 10 innovative ideas, but we are going to have to invest.
I swear he's not looking at my notes, but we're certainly teed up for the next question, which is about money generally. As both candidates have pointed out, state income continues to rise. but the structural deficit, particularly in the public employees' retirement system, forces regular increases in payments to the PERS fund, reducing the amount available for other portions of the state budget. Would you take on the PERS shortfall directly, or do you have some other approach to free up money for state programs? Jeff Golden first.
Oh, look at the time. We're going to have to close. First of all, PERS is the dilemma. It's a very difficult problem. It's a huge liability on municipalities and school districts, and it's a real problem, number one. Number two, it is a contracted agreement that the courts have said, for the most part, the largest part of this liability, the tier one retirees, the courts have been very clear that we can't change that. That's a contract that we can't break. The legislature tried to do that. So first of all, let's talk about changing what we can actually change instead of a pipe dream of what we can't. And second of all, let's stop beating up public employees. I can't count the number of times I've read about Mike Bellotti, University of Oregon's ex-football coach, and his $42,000 a month PERS pension. That's PERS, right? That's public employees. No. In fact, since 2003, when the legislature scaled down PERS benefits a lot, a typical state employee working 25 years will make a pension of about $30,000. And I'm really tired of seeing them demonized. We need them to do a good job, and making them the fall guy for this is not going to serve Oregon. So, solutions, long discussion. There are some things we can do. We can't get at that tier one money. There have been discussions about surtaxes on the amount that a tier one employee makes over their finishing salary. Be open to that. Be open to surtax of pensions over X thousand, $75,000. Be open to that. Be open to some of the ideas we have for conversions to defined benefit programs like 401ks or buyout of PERS employees. Some people have been working on that. I am skeptical when you crunch the monies that saves a lot, but it could some. We have to tackle this, but tackle the part we can do something about rather than making it a tool for elections. And we're going to have to find some revenue to meet our obligation.
Jessica Gomez, PERS and state funding generally.
Yeah, state funding. What a huge nut to try to crack, right? You will hear my opponents say over and over and over, revenue, revenue, revenue. We need to raise taxes. I disagree. We need to look at how do we build more prosperity in our state. If we want more revenue, we aren't based on income tax, right? We have to have more people that are working. Right now, we only have a 64% workforce participation rate. Many, many people are not actually working. And we could talk about why that is later, but we need to help people build those careers so that we can build a more prosperous state. I mean, that is absolutely critical. When it comes to PERS, we need to start being a little bit more creative, right? There are solutions to be had here, but unless we have the political will to move those forward, we're going to be stagnant in this area. And it's something that I think is affecting everyone that we must address. The way we got here is that what we did in the past is we couldn't offer competitive benefits to our competitive salaries to our teachers and our firefighters and our police officers. I spent and I talked to a few people and they said, you know, when I came here, I could have gotten a job somewhere else, but Oregon promised me a secure retirement, and that was really important to me. So we must keep those promises. However, if we take a look at the bulk of the debt, we have 63% of the debt is for people who are already retired. So what do? I propose that we offer a lump sum buyout to those people, and it would be voluntary, right? You can say, hey, look, if you want to, if we're going to buy out your retirement, here's the dollar amount. You can take it or leave it. You can stay in and do what you've been doing, or you can take the money at one time. What you do once you have that known debt is you take it and you restructure it and you stretch it out and you re-amortize it over a longer period of time. And that will give our school districts and our municipalities a little bit of relief that we need to ride this out.
This is a special edition of the Jefferson Exchange featuring Oregon State Senate District 3 candidates Jeff Golden and Jessica Gomez, recorded Thursday night, October 11th.
Next question, in the reverse order, is really from our listeners and about things on the ballot this year in addition to your names. Brenda Blair, John Almaguer, and Jessica and Talent want to know your stances on ballot measures 103 to block grocery taxes, 104 to require 3/5 Senate approval of fees and tax deductions and exemptions, 105 to repeal Oregon's sanctuary law, and 106 to block public funding for abortion. So four ballot measures.
In
2 minutes, yeah. We'll see how we do.
Okay.
This one will probably be a little less stringent, Don. Jessica Gomez?
Okay, so we said grocery tax,
yep.
Right? I don't think we should be taxing groceries. The reason why we have the ballot measures that we have today is because people are worried. They are worried that they're gonna continue to see this cry for increased revenue, right? They're worried that we're gonna get another Measure 97 on the ballot. They're worried that we're gonna come back in this next legislative session and then we're gonna see this hidden tax or a regressive style tax that our legislature has been trying to pass. And the reason why they're doing it is because the people of Oregon do not want a sales tax. So you're seeing this as a result of that, right? If we continue to impose fee after fee after fee on people who can't afford just the basics, how are we supposed to move forward? I think that's absolutely the wrong thing to do. So I support the 3/5 majority. I think that's important. I support the ban on grocery tax. When it comes to the abortion issue, boy, that's a really tough one, right? I'm pro-choice. But I understand the angst that people have, that our pro-life community has when it comes to spending their tax dollars on something like abortion. They really feel that it's wrong, and our legislature has continued to dismiss that feeling. I'm here to tell you that we need to find a way to come together around these issues. We can't just say it's my way or the highway. There are plenty of options for women who are less fortunate, and I support those options, but I think using our tax dollars in this way is inappropriate and dismissive of the people that feel like this is the wrong purpose.
Let me extend you by 30 seconds to get you on 105, Oregon
yeah.
Sanctuary law repeal.
Oh, I am not for sanctuary cities and sanctuary states. However, the way that this law was put in place is we had a guy that got pulled over and he was put in jail because they could not prove that he was a citizen. He came and he sued the state. So that's why we have that law. It's really an anti-racial profiling law. And I think that we should keep that in place. The real problem is what we put in place in 2017, which says that if someone is going through our criminal justice system, that we don't have to, and maybe we shouldn't even coordinate with immigration officials when we find out that person is here illegally. That's putting extra stress on our system that we don't need. We have enough problems trying to deal with what we have here today.
Jeff Golden, you get, thank you, Jessica Gomez. So Jeff Golden, we go to 2.5 for you.
Thank you. I can't talk fast enough to cover these four measures in this time. I will be voting no on all four of these measures. 103 grocery tax, nobody wants a grocery tax. It's regressive. Unless it's done certain ways, it's regressive. Nobody wants to do that. 103 and 104 have something in common. They are funded by very large corporations. In the case of 103, Safeway and Kroger, and 104, which requires a supermajority for any reduction of tax credits, among other things, is funded by corporations that really enjoy Oregon's very wide tax credits for corporations. And it puts these in the Constitution. So the Legislative Council says if 103 passes and we want to add anything to Kroger and Safeway's corporate tax, we can't. They interpret that as not allowable under 103. 104 says you need a 60% majority for any reduction of a tax credit. Here's one tax credit or one privilege for corporations that I think we ought to look at in the discussion about revenue so that we can have a progressive tax system. If commercial and industrial property were assessed at real market value instead of a discounted value, I don't want to get too far in the weeds. It's estimated that would produce $1.26 billion a biennium. That is worth talking about. But you can't talk about it if you pass 104. because it's in the Constitution. You don't make tax policy and put it in the Constitution. I don't know if any other state does that. And of course, legislators' hands are tied to do what's right at a particular time. 105, if it passes, will make Oregon the national model for racial profiling. And it fixes a problem that doesn't exist. It reverses a 30-year-old law that nobody says has been problematic, including most of law enforcement. I don't want Oregon to lead on racial profiling. And 106, the bottom line, yes, of course it's easy to understand the angst of pro-life people who don't want tax dollars going to abortion. We all understand that. That is a bad situation. But the bottom line is if 106 passes, we are saying women of certain economic means have full reproductive rights, and women who don't have those means, poorer women, don't. That's un-American and un-Oregonian.
This is a special edition of the Jefferson Exchange, featuring a candidate forum with Oregon Senate District 3 candidates Jessica Gomez and Jeff Golden, recorded Thursday night, October 11th.
All right, next question for Jeff Golden first, Jessica Gomez second. This one from Alaya Katani, who emailed it in. She writes, "It's been my impression that the rights of women has not been a significant aspect of your running platform in communications and appearances. In light of the jeopardy of Roe versus Wade, increasing headlines of abuses of power, and the significant statistics of violations against women, I wonder why." Jeff Golden first.
Okay. So I think probably it's important to try to get clear on what government can do and what legislators can do and what communities can do. The topic that's gotten the most attention on the legislative level is how is a Capitol building run? There are reasons to believe that women have been harassed and abused in different ways in the Capitol over the years. I'm sure it's not the only Capitol building, that's true. And it is really difficult or hazardous to a career for a woman to come forward with complaints. And that blew up in a well-covered case a couple years ago with former Senator Jeff Cruz, and we need a third party to be examining that rather than have the legislature police itself. We can't have a state that's safe for women and that really, really reduces harassment if the state capitol isn't a safe place. That's clearly in the legislature's hands. The other things, making our communities safer for women, I really think, you know, I'd be very open to legislative proposals to do that. But my belief is that this is work for community organizations, perhaps with some financial support from the state. There is a new one called CAUSE, Keep Ashland Women Safe in This Town, that I think is doing a very good job of raising awareness and pushing the uncomfortable questions. I'm a private supporter. As a senator, I'd like to see if there could be more help. But those communities are popping up everywhere. And I think, you know, more generally, the state should be in the business of supporting and bolstering and maybe matching some funding for community organizations that are solving problems that the big institutions aren't. There's a lot of that going on. This may be one of those examples. And I think every one of us have, you know, this women's harassment is not a women's problem. It is all of our problem. And everywhere we work, everywhere we have responsibility, it is our responsibility to do something about it.
Jessica Gomez, Rights of Women.
What is the most important thing that we can do to prevent this from happening, to prevent sexual misconduct and harassment in the workplace? What is the one most important thing that we can do? Elevate more women into leadership roles. Elect more women. It is so important to have diversity in the workplace. Gender diversity, cultural diversity, right? When we have a team that's working together like that, we're not gonna see these types of problems continue to permeate our workplaces, our state legislature, our federal government. I mean, this is absolutely unacceptable, and it takes cultural change, right? So we need to start with little girls. We need to start with our young boys in teaching them how to conduct themselves, what it means to respect each other and to give to each other and to promote each other in work and in school. This is absolutely important. Those are types of things that you can't legislate, right? We need community leadership around these areas. And that is one of the jobs of a good legislator, right? It's not just to go to Salem and make law all the time. That's not what we're here to do. We're here to provide community leadership. Let's bring our community together around the things that matter to us most, and then back that up with good, strong legislation. It's an absolute must. There's lots of things that we can do legislatively with equity and whatnot, right? But how we implement them makes a big difference. How we as communities feel about those laws make a big difference. And I think it starts right here at home.
This is a special edition of the Jefferson Exchange featuring Oregon State Senate District 3 candidates Jeff Golden and Jessica Gomez, recorded Thursday night, October 11th.
A number of the questions submitted for the Oregon Senate District 3 candidates dealt with climate change, global warming, increasing greenhouse gases, whatever term you wish to apply to it other than hoax. Larry Chase is the one whose question I chose, and Jessica Gomez, you go first on this one. What specific ideas do you have for Oregon to be a leader in reducing greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide and methane to stanch global warming?
That's a great question. Multifaceted, right? I think that reducing greenhouse gases is really, really important, but we're a small state, so what is our role? How do we come together and how do we be impactful? That's what we want. I'm concerned that we're going to end up spending a lot of money and we're going to get zero results, right? We're talking about some of the legislation that's continued to be put forward, cap and trade legislation. What do we get for that, right? Cap and trade is really complex. We're going to end up spending a lot of money on trying to figure out how to administrate this at the state level. I have no confidence our state can actually manage a program that big. We're struggling with things like DHS, DEQ. All of these agencies are struggling just to do the basics, and then we're going to ask them to spin up this really complex legislation. And then, right, what are we going to do with that $700 million a year? What is the degrees that we're going to reduce our climate by, our global warming percentage by, with $700 million. I don't think it will be impactful. So what are the things that we can do? I think we need to focus on water conservation, right? We're seeing less snowpack in our mountains. As we do get warmer, we need to think very carefully about how we manage our water. And that means funding the WISE project, in closing those canals so we have pressurized water and we're saving water. That's really critical. The next thing is proper forest management. We've got 90 to 150 trees per acre would be healthy. We've got over 1,500 trees, which is using lots of water. They get dried out. We have fire over the summer and smoke. Really not good. We need to get back in there and start really properly managing those forests. And then the last thing we should be doing is investing in technology, investing back into our university system, because what can we really export here from Oregon? Good technology.
Jeff Golden, ideas for reducing greenhouse gases.
I think I can sign on to most of the ideas Jessica just mentioned, especially water conservation. Let's start with the fundamental here, at least my strong belief, and I think there's pretty great scientific foundation for it. We are in a crisis. Climate change isn't coming, it is here. And there, it's very clear that we have to reduce greenhouse gas emissions very deeply, very quickly. Some doubt that we're, as a species, going to be able to do it. I'm still betting on us, but it has to happen really fast. The record from countries around the world and the new record of a few states in the United States, especially California, but mostly around the world, is that the fastest, most effective way to do that is to put a price on greenhouse gas emissions. And there are lots of ways to do that. We're learning how to do that. That is complicated. It's a new thing. We have let fossil fuels put the cost of the cost of climate change and of public health and a bunch of other things on our shoulders. Now we're saying, you know what, you're going to pay for it, and you're going to be disincentivized to put this fuel in the environment, and you're going to find cleaner fuels. I don't know a better way to do this. I am completely open to other approaches, some proven sound approaches that aren't, you know, political rhetoric to cut greenhouse gas emissions fast. And I mean fast. And 2 days ago, an international panel told us that again. There are things to work out with this legislation, the current clean energy jobs. There's no question about that. I'm concerned that it'll be watered down to where it's not very effective. It does generate its own revenue. We don't know how much to pay for the kind of administration Jessica's talking about. I think it is grossly irresponsible to say we can't move forward when we should have moved forward 30 years ago because it's too complicated for Oregon. Yes, Oregon is a small state. By itself, it's not going to impact this, the global picture very much. What it's going to do is join a Western front with California, Washington, British Columbia that is taking the mantle of American leadership when Washington, D.C. has dropped it, and ally with the rest of the world to try to save humanity in the next 10, 15, 20 years, and I do not think that's overstating the case.
This is a special edition of the Jefferson Exchange, featuring a candidate forum with Oregon Senate District 3 candidates Jessica Gomez and Jeff Golden, recorded Thursday night, October 11th.
There were so many good questions on so many topics here, it was actually kind of hard to narrow the field just a bit, and I believe we have time for one more exchange of questions before we get to closing statements. Let me bring in a question then from Misha Blair, starting with Jeff Golden. It is well known that mental health services are inadequate in most of the United States and certainly in our district. Can you please explain in specifics how you plan to address this issue, which contributes to homelessness, overcrowded hospitals, and packed jails and prisons?
This is not an exaggeration. This is generating our negligence of the mental health picture over the years, our underfunding and disinvestment since the state got out of the business in the 90s, is fueling a whole host of other social problems. This is another place where we have to make an investment at a scale that cutting waste, fraud, and abuse is not going to cover. So, a number of things. First of all, I think that individuals from NAMI, which is a fantastic community organization, there are several others in this county I've got to know something about, including Asante with its sanctuary model of mental health care, doing it on a small scale, and especially Compass House, which is reintegrating people with mental health challenges into the community in a brilliant way with something called the clubhouse model that's really empowering them. They are doing things that large bureaucracies can't do. So one of the things I want to do is use their volunteer force, their expertise, their creative brilliance, and de-bureaucratize the way services are made and find some funding for them in the form of grants. I want to make sure that our coordinated core organizations that we did with Medicaid expansion, which deserve our thanks for approaching a whole patient wellness system, really have what it takes to address mental health problems more thoroughly. And I especially want to restore mental health services to our schools and our elementary schools. I have talked to more teachers than I would have liked to about disrupted learning and how they are clearing their classrooms once a week, twice a week, some say three times a week, because of outbursts of severely challenged kids, many of them homeless. That's unacceptable. Most of these schools do not have a resource. They don't know what to do with these children, and they are disrupting the learning for everyone else. Gosh, I wonder why we have low graduation rates. We have to get upstream of this. We have to invest fundamentally in mental health in a sound way.
Time.
We can do it cost effectively if we partner with some of these community organizations.
Jessica Gomez, mental health services and how to provide them.
Mental health is such a challenge here locally. I went and I spent some time and I walked down along the freeway between Phoenix and Medford, and I went and I spoke to some of the homeless people living in under the brush there, under tarps. I have to tell you, it was pretty sobering to see what was going on there, right? That problem is, we're seeing what's happening there, and it's a tiered problem, right? Our homeless population is really, really suffering from mental health issues, and in some cases, behavioral health issues that are tied to addiction, right? We have a huge addiction issue here locally. If you were just to take a peek of what's going on underneath our overpasses, it is absolutely incredible to see that kind of destruction happening here in our city that is so small, our region that is so small. We have got to focus on addiction issues and start putting resources there and preventing people from getting onto these really hardcore drugs, a heroin and methamphetamines, right? When we see mental health being an issue in our community, We don't know whether or not it's before the drug addiction issue or if the drug addiction issue is as a result of the mental health, if someone is self-medicating. We have to find ways to tease those things apart and start providing care. We might need a 100-bed facility here just to handle this problem. And our jails are overloaded. We can't handle it in our criminal justice system. It is just not an appropriate place.
This is a special edition of the Jefferson Exchange featuring Oregon State Senate District 3 candidates Jeff Golden and Jessica Gomez.
I want to compliment both of the candidates on not doing what often happens in forums like this, which is say, oh, I want to go back 2 answers ago and clarify what I said. So
the night's not over.
That is true. We have 5 minutes left from each of the candidates as they offer their closing statements. And as we mentioned at the outset of the session, Jeff Golden won the coin toss, so he has opted to go last. So 5 minutes now for Jessica Gomez to make a case for why you should vote for her for Oregon Senate District 3.
Well, first, I'd just like to thank all of you for sitting through this and listening to Jeff and I kind of go on and on about these issues. You know, we've got some short-term things that need to be addressed, and we have some long-term things, right? Some of the short-term issues are the smoke and the fire every summer. We have got to get that under control. You know, it is a public health issue. It is an economic issue. It is a livability issue. I'm talking to people all the time that are thinking about leaving. We have folks that are trying to break their contract over at the Manor, trying to leave. We just can't take another couple of years like this. This must be addressed right away. And we can do that through strategic forest management. We need to get in there. We have the technology to do strategic timber harvest in a healthy way and keep the biodiversity of our forests. But we've got to start now, and we have to build some consensus around this issue. So I encourage you, keep your voices loud about this. It's going to be really, really important. The next thing that we should really be focusing on is healthcare. Our healthcare costs are rising at a huge rate, right? We have a lot of people that are on OHP here, which is wonderful, but the rest of everyone else that is popping out of that income bracket is paying enormous dollars. Our company pays 100% of our healthcare for our employees and their families. We don't take anything out of their check. We still have a huge deductible for them, and we also kick in money for that. But it's enormous. How do we bring down that cost, right? I think we need to look at, number one, pharmaceuticals are out of control. We pay two-thirds more than what they pay for the same drugs in areas like Canada, right? We make our drugs here, we ship them off to Canada, and Canada gets to pay a third less. That is absolutely unacceptable. We've got to start working on those cost drivers, so the administrative costs, and building a healthier population, right? If we were healthier, then we wouldn't need to spend that kind of money on those drugs and that health insurance. I've got some strategies around that. Stick around after. We can kind of talk through them. I think they're great. The next thing really is looking at some of the longer-term things. Housing. How do we keep up with our growth here locally? We've got to bring up a lot more housing. We have a 1%, 1.5% vacancy rate. We've got to address that, and that we do that by streamlining the permitting process and stimulating growth in our building new units for people to live. Long term, again, education. We've got to start with our little kids, right? We got to have them go through an education system that is truly excellent so that they can contribute to our state's prosperity. It's absolutely critical. We need to work on building a more diverse economy, right? Where are these little children going to work when they grow up and they try to provide for a family? We don't have the family wage jobs here that we should. We have jobs between, I would say, $12 and $15 an hour jobs. Those $50,000 and $60,000 and $75,000 jobs, we don't have enough of them to sustain the kind of community that we really want here. The next is breaking that cycle of generational poverty. If I'm a mom and I have 2 children, I'm reliant on some of our safety net systems. Maybe I receive OHP. Maybe I receive food stamps. The minute I go to work, those services start to drop off really quickly, quicker than I can pay to replace them. That is unacceptable. We have to have a system that rewards work all the time so that mom can get out and build that career. What does she do when that happens? She starts to back down on her hours. Maybe she waits another couple of years to build that career she's always wanted. We can't have a system like that. We are trapping people in that cycle of poverty. Let's gather around the issues that really matter to our region here. We need a strong voice coming from Southern Oregon that is really going to be impactful in Salem. We can't have another Portland-based agenda coming from Southern Oregon. It's not healthy for us, and it doesn't work. They can do whatever they want up there. They can build legislation that works for a more populated area. But we are different, and we need somebody who understands that. And I will be that person for you and fight every day to bring prosperity to Southern Oregon. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Jessica Gomez. Jeff Golden, your 5-minute closing statement.
Well, I'm struck listening to Jessica how much we agree on many of the problems, even though we don't agree perhaps on the urgency and the solutions and the need, the practical realities of reinvestment. I want to thank you all very much. This is good. We need more of this to do our democracy right. I've been stopped by 10 or 12 people during this campaign, maybe more, and thanked in a very sincere way for stepping up to try to do public service in these weird times. And I'll bet anything Jessica has heard the same comment, and that's bracing and motivating, energizing. You feel seen when you hear that. But I really have to say it is a huge privilege to have a platform like this to talk about your view of where we are in Oregon and where we could go in Oregon, what the immense possibilities are in Oregon. So that is a privilege that's beyond price. With that privilege comes a responsibility to make it very clear to people that all the pretty pictures that Jessica and I can paint in our campaign brochures and everywhere else about great education and health care and senior care and a great prosperous state, none of those are going to happen by themselves. They will only happen because we're in some deep holes with a very serious lift from all of us. And that's going to take programmatic changes, and we can talk plenty more about that. I want to go somewhere a little different. I think it's going to take a very fundamental shift in the way we think about politics, we think about society, and we think about how we live. I want to give you an example grounded in a pressing current issue that we didn't talk enough about tonight: housing, affordable housing, and homelessness. I, like Jessica, I've been on the trail talking to a lot of people, the major players we're going to need to put together some kind of solution in this really, really difficult problem. So typically I would go to the organizations, realtors, developers, builders, landlords association. I would talk to them. They'd bring us in for interviews. And basically the question they had is, what are you going to do in Salem to protect my organization from getting dinged, from any more fees and taxes, from being required to negotiate with local governments to build affordable units, any limits on how high we can raise rent? How are you going to protect us from that? And I have been trying to say, with respect, that with the depth of this problem, affordable housing, and the endless problems that it generates in education and substance abuse and child neglect and long list, it's at the middle, it's the nexus. With where we are right now, with respect, you are not asking the right question. The right question right now, if we are serious about this state and its future, is what can I bring to the table? What can I bring to the table now? I don't want to beat anybody up. Of course they ask those questions. That's how we do politics right now. But our politics has to change. So I'm not interested, you know, I don't know if you know, there's an estimated 2,500 homeless children in our county of 215,000 people. If that's not staggering, you think about those children with no place to call home, no place to put their things, no place to clean up, no place to know they're going to get warm meals, and we wonder why they come to school in a way that disrupts education. You know, that must be the teacher's fault. They're not teaching them well enough. This is tied to all our problems. So I'm not interested. We don't need to take a huge pound of flesh out of anyone. We need a healthy real estate, development, building industry to be a thriving state. We have to have that. But, you know, no one party has the responsibility for solving this thing. But all of us have some of the weight of solving it. And it's, if I sound like I've been hard on businesses or corporations tonight, we need to look in the mirror, too. The Hope Village, the tiny home village in Medford that's doing great work, that had so much trouble getting cited because neighborhood groups came in and said, not in my backyard. Don't put those people near me. I understand that. I can feel some of that. I probably said some of that in the past. We have to shift our attitude as individuals, too. So to build the Oregon we want, I think we got to do two things. We have to break the stranglehold of special interest money in politics, number one. Maybe talk about that another time. And number two, start bringing that question. What more can I bring to the table in a true Oregon patriotism? And the more people who do that, the more people who will do that. More later. Thank you very much for coming. Lastly, huge thanks to my wife, Sarah Collard, without whose love and support for this crazy adventure and wisdom, I could never possibly do this. Thank you, and please keep building a better Oregon with us.
Just to really balance out the time, I want to make sure you have a chance to thank some of the people in your campaign you want to address here.
Thank you. I have an amazing team. My husband is here, Pat. Thank you so much for putting up with me through this whole process. My family, everybody's working really hard, and they're working hard for you to make sure that you have the best candidate and the best senator that we can elect here in Southern Oregon. So thank you so much.
And that concludes our Senate District 3 candidate forum. Would you join me once again in thanking Jessica Gomez and Jeff Golden? Thank you.